What I liked about this scene is that obviously they're trying to develop this Benjamin character for a nice thirsty death.
For just a blood fountain of a death.
Yeah, just a fucking spray, arterial spray death. They're setting him up for that. But I like how he has this relationship with Ezekiel. And he is right. Is this the linchpin? Is Ezekiel, is Benjamin's death the precipitous moment for Ezekiel to become motivated? Probably. But
I hope not, but you're probably right.
They killed my white son.
Killed my honky boy.
My honky boy was so good. I hated his whack ass hair, but he will do.
All right, slay them all. Kill the saviors.
I love my dead white son. Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media, motherfuckers. We're back from our mid-season break, and we're going to talk about some Walking Dead. Me and my good buddy Matthew. How you doing today, pal?
So good. I feel like so much time. It feels so much longer than it actually has been. You got a fucking Super Bowl under your belt. I got a fucking national title under my belt. We've just been living a whole other life in between these halves.
And so many podcasts in between, bonus episodes, science fiction film, podcast eps, all kinds of shit.
Fucking A.
Well, now we're here. We're back to The Walking Dead. A much needed break, I kind of felt. And we're back at it with episode called Rock in the Road. That's Matthew Anderson coming at you from Portland. And I am Dean, all the way in Massachusetts. Cross country, although you'd never know it because we got the sound quality shit licked, son.
That's so, right.
So we're doing
Pop
it.
Pop filter, $20 on Amazon. Invest in yourselves.
Yes. Invest in yourselves. What's your excuse? So here we go. We're going to talk about The Walking Dead. It's your first time here. We're going to spoil the episode. So prepare yourself for that if you're not used to that. We are going to spoil the shit out of it. We're going to explicate our way through it. I do not know comic book spoilers. I don't know if Matt does, but I will not.
Really.
I don't know anything. So any speculations that come up during the show are purely speculation. I do not read the comics. If I say something and you think it's a spoiler, I can assure you it's not. And if it is, it's completely and utterly accidental. We're also probably going to say some bad words now and again. So usher the children away.
Considering 10 seconds in, we opened up with motherfuckers. You should have figured that out by now.
That's true. So there you have it. And we hope you're ready. We're gonna hang out. We're going to put our feet up on your couch. We're going to talk Walking Dead with you. We're going to crack a beer, or in this case, a coffee, so I can stay the fuck awake. And that's it. We're going to go. So, Matt, here we are, months later, and we're back, motherfuckers. We're back. And I want to know your initial impressions of this shit right off the bat.
Right off the bat, for one, straight up, very, very glad that we got to see King Ezekiel again. It's about damn time. Mm. It was smart for them to go ahead and play that card of theirs quick. Glad to see him. Fucking, I loved all of his scenes, man. I really like this guy. I like the actor who portrays him. I should have looked up his name before the cast. But no, really enjoyed that character. And his scenes were probably my favorite of the episode. Mm. On the whole, I think it's a pretty strong one. I'm pretty happy with this. And I know there's a lot of chatter on the internet about the silliness of the car scene of them pulling the wire. And it's a bit of a spectacle and a little bit ridiculous, but I fucking enjoyed it. It was a good time. It was a good, spectacular, inventive zombie death that we've all imagined. Like, come on, who hasn't thought about that? Of like, if I was in the apocalypse, dude, I'd have two big trucks and a big cable. We would just go around decapitating zombies all day. Like, it's absurd, but it's still kind of cool to see them play it out. So I enjoyed the stuff overall. I'm a little bit, obviously the biggest mysterious element of this episode is Father Gabriel and what the hell he's up to and why he left, which I guess we get a sort of hint about at the end, which I didn't even catch until my second viewing. I saw this first time in a bar, so with a lot of shit going on. So my first viewing wasn't the nuanced one, and then I had to pick up the details a little later. But man, I fucking enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a pretty strong return. It wasn't the big kickoff that some, you know, mid-season returns have been as far as like just gigantic set pieces, but It was enough to keep me paying attention. I enjoyed this. How about you?
It's not as bad as people think it is. I'll start there by trying to be somewhat reasonable, because there's a couple things that happen this episode that I like. First of all, we have this opening mystery involving Father G, which I'm not sure what is going on there. And then we got a few other things going on. We have this is very reminiscent of Game of Thrones, when Jon Snow is trying to get the aid of the other houses, and he has to travel around and sort of pitch his plan as to, it's time we have to fight the Boltons. He does this kind of whole thing where he goes around pleading his case. It's similar in that, which made me think of that. And I liked, it was nice to have Rick back, kind of doing something a little bit different, being
Rick
social.
On a rebound, finally.
Yeah. Rick's on a rebound a bit, right? Ezekiel scenes, of course, continue to stand out.
Totally.
And I actually enjoyed the, what's his name? Simon's always good, right?
Yeah, Stephen Ogg.
Yeah, he's great. And then the sort of that scene you're referring to, the big action moment where they're outside on the highway, the on ramp, trying to block it. In comes the herd. They have to chop them all up with a cable. I like the idea of it. It just kind of looked a little corny because it's so obviously CG, just flying around. But what I actually liked better than that was I actually enjoyed them trying to disarm the explosives on the wire up against the clock.
Same.
I think that's something a little bit different. One thing I complain about with The Walking Dead a lot is it's always the same shit over and over again. And this time it was a little bit different. They had this wire. They're all hanging out. They had to disarm the bombs on that wire while waiting for a herd, while hoping a bomb doesn't go off. There's a lot of external stressors that made that scene kind of cool to me. I liked that stuff. Gregory continues to be a soppy-eyed cunt. I'm looking forward to talking about him. And there's some stuff to talk about here. It was pretty decent Walking Dead. I think if you watch this episode and you hated it, then I think it's probably time you stop watching The Walking Dead. Right?
Agreed.
I think you're probably at a point where you're thinking, well, there's nothing really left going. If you hated this episode, and there's a couple, like my biggest gripe might be Jesus.
I gotta be honest with you,
he's fucking terrible. I don't know if it's the script he was handed where he's saying like ridiculous shit, or the way he's executing it, or if he just had a fucking bad day on set. I don't know what it is. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't do it, but I don't get paid to do it, so I don't know. I mean, he felt so phony to me. I don't know what it was.
I do got to agree in the sense that I think he's probably the weakest actor, at least. There are things, I'll put it this way, there are things the character Jesus has done that I've really liked, and it has gotten me to like the character. But it's this actor's portrayal of him in certain moments and just certain deliveries of lines where you're like, oof, just a little.
Like he lacks presence on screen. He lacks
When you put him and Rick together and it's like an exchange between them, like Rick just has presence.
He dominates the whole
totally
fucking frame.
Dominates it. Yeah.
It's the same thing with Ezekiel. That man has a lot of presence. There's a lot of strength of character in him, and when he's standing there, Jesus looks like a little piece of shit, right? There's
he looks
nothing.
Like a bass player for like a Seattle grunge band that didn't make it out of the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, even this guy Gregory, the guy who plays Gregory, he's a great actor too. I mean, like, he's a shithead, but he's fucking good. And Steve Ogg, as we mentioned, he definitely feels like he's punching above his weight class to be in the scenes with these guys. But I agree. If I go back in time and think about Jesus, most of the stuff that I appreciated was his physicality. And even that wasn't amazing. Like, I've complained about some of his, like, fucking crescent kicks, right? He's doing the fucking kicks and the splits. I have to do the kicks, but, yeah, I don't know.
He did not consult with the Van Damme.
He did not go to Kick Academy, but he was...
Kicks Academy.
Yeah, I don't know. He feels a little underwhelming to me at this point. And it's I don't know. Maybe it could be the script, so I'm not going to sit here and say the guy sucks. I mean, he's...
Well, my other thing, you know, so I had a moment of where there were a couple of just lines the way, you know, this actor who portrays Jesus says them, where I'm like, oh, it's just kind of like out of place, maybe slightly over stylized dialogue. Maybe that's just the way it's written that's bugging me. But then I remember, oh no, wait, King Ezekiel has the most bonkers ass dialogue in this entire show, and that actor's delivery makes it work.
He crushes it.
So I'm like, that's not really the issue.
Yeah, I don't know. But that, I mean, that's kind of like my overall high level thoughts on this week's episode. I was, I liked a lot of the dialogue. I liked a lot of the convincing. I was actually a little bit surprised at some of the results of this. Specifically, I was really surprised at Ezekiel denying them help. I didn't anticipate that. I thought we were going to get these guys teaming up quick. I thought they were going to then go on to the planning stage, maybe some preliminary raids and some sort of assault into this war. And I was surprised when he said no. I said, oh, cool, that's different. I didn't expect that. I like the fact that he says no. And I like, you know what I like about him saying no? I like the fact that the thing that's cool about him saying no, number one, can you blame him for wanting to get involved with these fucking white people's problems? How many times is this fucking guy going to get dragged into some white drama that he has
Here's
to go?
Here's fucking cracker committee knocking on my door again, trying to pull me
into
their bullshit.
Hey, what's going on? I don't want to fucking fight for you, man. God damn. Shit. Give me a fucking break. Getting pulled into your goddamn white bummer. I don't want no part of that shit. I don't care if you got a guy named Jesus with you. And, you know, we are a spiritual people, but that's just not going to fly.
Bullshit, Jesus.
That Jesus looks a little white, motherfucker. So I don't know what I'm talking about. But I think that it was cool because it puts the group in a scenario that's a little bit different than we're used to seeing. And that's Rick being told no and not being able to do anything about it. The Alexandrians couldn't tell Rick no because Rick just sort of bullied his way through and de facto ruled, even though Diana in fucking sweater vest guy that got his neck cut off. Even though those guys were there, but this is cool. Rick has to just walk away and be like, fuck.
My favorite sequence of this entire episode is when they go to see Ezekiel and Rick and him have that exchange. And then there's the scene of you know, Ezekiel talking to, what's his name? Kid prodigy that he has to look out for, protege. And then the scene where he has his reply for them. That whole aspect of the show, and I didn't love it as much on the first viewing. The second viewing, thinking more about it, I really, really like the different perspectives on the story that Rick tells. I really can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, good stuff. Rick's story was fucking terrible. I'm sorry.
I've got a lot to say about it.
It's not the actual parable. Like that's really bastardized the way he told it. It's called like the King's Road or something. It was written a gazillion years ago by some anonymous author. And I'll tell you a little bit about it, a little bit about what I know and remember of it. And then I looked it up to fill in all the details, but I was watching him tell the story. And I was like, what the fuck this? And then he did this other thing. So I don't know. We'll get to that. But anyway, let's hop over to the start of this bad boy. We'll get right to a little bit of Midnight Rider out there hanging out in the middle of the night, chilling, him and his Bible. So, number one, you should have two guards.
Right.
You should always have two guards because if one gets compromised, you can have an alarm. If he gets his throat cut, if somebody climbs up there and kills him, there's no alarm. They're all going to get killed in their sleep, right? So this is the first problem is they're running a little light with their, and maybe that's because those guys are out, but they need two guards. You can't do one guard. That just doesn't work. You have to have two because if he gets sniped with a suppressor from 500 meters away, no one's going to know anything because he knocks over a bunch of cans and opens a gate and fucking drives away and nobody knows. So you got to have...
If you only have one guard, then that guard can, fucking go AWOL and leave with all your shit and nobody will know about it.
Dude, yeah, exactly. Case in point. He takes all your shit and fucking leaves. Oh, he opens the door and lets all his friends in. They come and cut your fucking throat. So you need two guards. So let's do two guards regardless of how fucking thin your goddamn skeleton crew is right now. You have to have two. It's just too much of a liability otherwise. Anyway, we see him start walking around. He gets down. He's not even at his post, so he's completely abandoned his post. A hanging offense, I'd say, Sack. And he walks into the pantry area, as we've come to know it as, which is this garage attached. And he just starts knocking shit over. Like,
yeah.
So I didn't even know it was him at first until, because it kind of cuts to stuff hitting the floor. And then he's up and he's kind of getting his sweat on. He hasn't been sweaty in a while.
He really, a slight reversion to Father McSweaty here, just for a minute. I'm trying to throw him the same bone that Rick tries to throw him later. I'm like, no, he's better than this now. But yeah. Like, for a second here, oh, it's a glistening forehead for sure.
Yes, for sure. He's glistening. He's getting a little worried because he's stealing and Jesus doesn't like that. He loads up, it looks like some tools. I think I see a hatchet in there.
Oh, yeah, some fighting weapons.
And he fucking loads up the trunk, pours some gas in there. And he drives off, shakily breathing as he does so. What the fuck was going through your mind in this moment, Matt? I gotta know.
At first, you know, just a knee-jerk, what the fuck are you doing? Are you really, is this him, toughness or determination he had found in himself is just crumbled, and that's it, he's abandoning ship. But then I also had this moment of maybe this is his panicked and reckless, but it's a panicked, reckless version of it, but it's his attempt to stick it to the fucking saviors by saying, I would rather take all of our shit and leave with it, even our weapons, in order to not give any of it to them. Like, I don't know if it was just a misguided attempt at some kind of weird revenge. I don't know.
I'm really confused by the whole thing, to be honest with you. And maybe there's something I'm missing here. Even watching it twice, I'm still not 100% sure.
Well, there is, and a lot of people in the chat are bringing this up, Mickey Lagares, and I didn't catch this until my second time around also. There is someone else in this car.
Yeah, he sits up.
Yeah, somebody sits up. And so yeah. I'm guessing it's one of these fucking psychotic river people at the end. I don't know, one of these water world people that show up out of nowhere who've been helping him out. But where I'm lost is just, when did he get in contact with any of these people? Like, how do you know anybody? I don't know.
Yes. So I am curious about this. Now, we do know, let's try to remember before the break. We do know that one of those people were surveilling Alexandria. So there's somebody lurking around. Now, I don't know if they made contact. I don't know what happened there, but
that's true.
If I'm watching Father G's actions. Number one, he doesn't want anybody to know what he's doing, which is why he does it when he does it. Right? Is that what I'm trying to say? Yes.
Yeah.
There's a bit of panic in him. That's why I thought, is this a spur of the moment decision? Yeah. Because he just sort of messily starts piling shit and knocking shit over, or is he just being very nervous and shaky because he has a premeditated plan?
Yes, I think it's more of a guilt-ridden decision. I
think so too.
If there's no second person in the car, maybe this is a spur of the moment thing. But the fact that there's a conspirator with him that indicates some planning, some forethought. This has been on his mind, and he just is uneasy with the plan. Doesn't feel great about it, but he's going through with it, which must mean it's fairly important to him that he thinks this is this thing that, in a way, would pretty much be received by anybody at Alexandria as, hey, he's fucking us over. He thinks it's for the greater good and that this is the way to go about it.
Right. In the chat, Tiffany's asking, did he say something like, now it's time? He actually didn't say that. If he did, I missed it. What he did say was just checking. If you watch carefully, yeah, if you put on the captions, you got to watch your shit with the captions. He says, just checking as he's raiding the pantry. While looking at his notebook, he actually says it. He's thumbing through the notebook and he says, just checking.
Gotcha. Huh.
So there's something very deliberate and measured going on here as he references the book, which is, I guess, some sort of inventory?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. He also picks up his Bible and is looking at a very particular passage.
I know.
We don't see what it is. He finishes it, closes it, and that's when he heads off to do all this. I'm like, I was hoping that when Rick picked up the Bible, it was going to be the same page and we were going to get a look
much.
At it. And we didn't.
And it would have been some badass revelation shit that pointed right. That would have been cool. I thought
the
same.
And the wicked one must leave metal.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, I was feeling the same way. But it didn't happen. Yeah, you know, the Bible. Fucking fire and brimstone, fucking punish the sinners, burn the earth and shit. You know, kill babies because God likes that. I don't know.
I didn't know we were going to get all religious.
I didn't get through the whole thing, truth be told. But there's some good stuff in there. But yeah, he sort of takes off, and that person sits up. So that there's no way if that person sits up and then the car just continues, there's no way he doesn't see that person.
Oh yeah, no, he was planning on that. You know, that person was waiting for him.
Right,
he knew about it. Yeah,
and I wonder who that person is. That person must be somebody. Here's my guess. That person is somebody who's going to show him to get where he needs to go, because he doesn't know the way to go where he's supposed to get, because it's hidden. Would that
that's
make sense?
Yeah, like, that's a way of saying it. But
sorry, that's a fucking bad way of saying it. That's a podcast. Nobody. In other words, this person's going to show him the way.
Yeah, like that. It's a hidden location, and yeah. He has to have a guide from this place to get him there.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
And I think you are right that you know, we had that little glimpse of a boot with some tape on it in the last, you know, mid-season finale, and it must be that person. Otherwise,
it's what's what's her name, that chick that we met in the beginning that was sort of rebelling against her friends. That would be her. She has that boot, doesn't she?
Wait, which chick?
The one that is got the little kid with her, and they find Tara.
Oh.
Yeah, I forget her name. Somebody in the chat.
Oh, you mean the Oceanside people. No, I agree.
Same boot. If I'm not wrong.
I know a boot when I see one.
Yeah, I pay attention to women's footwear. It really matters. It really completes their ensemble, you know?
Ensemble.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But no, maybe somebody in the chat can remind me. I can't remember their names, but
I think you're right.
It could be. I could be wrong. I don't know. But it's at this point, we should probably remind people we're on Mixlr, right?
Oh, yeah. We have people listening to us live and correcting our bullshit.
Yes. Mixlr.com/LSG-media. That's MIXLR.com/LSG-media, where we record all our shows live. Boo doo doo boo boo boo. That's a little jingle. All right. So we get our opening credits and we cut right to Gregory saying, no, 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 no. Something like that, right?
I just don't want to. Mm. Yeah, pretty much.
He's not down.
Definitely not.
He's refusing to go to war with the Saviors. Now, can we do a little devil's advocacy here?
Oh, sure. No, I'm totally down for that.
I mean, of course not, right?
Right?
Why would this guy want to go to war with the Saviors?
Yeah. I mean, because these are the people. So, I mean, Rick's group, you know, and Daryl and them had isolated run-ins with the Saviors before without even knowing who they were. And it was all Gregory who revealed, we are being constantly antagonized by these people. They have a large force. They're called the Saviors. Can you take them out for us? You know, basically hired them for a contract. And then they went out, fucking killed a bunch of people, made the situation way worse because now you've riled up all of the rest of the Saviors that are out there. And they're fucking coming down with their boot on your neck. And then the same people you hired on this contract come back like, hey, can you help us fight the rest of them? Fuck no. Hell no. They're kicking my ass even harder than they were before.
Right. Right.
I get it. I do get it. He's a dickhead, but I get it.
Yeah. He's kind of in a weird position. My favorite part is how Rick is like, is this how you like living? And I'm just like, surrounded by many leather-bound books in an ornate chair in a comfy place with a delicious... comfortable rug with food and walls. Yes.
And booze. It's,
yes. And my little storage. Yes. I fucking love it. No, I don't want to go to war. I'm not a fucking warrior. Look at me. I'm pushing 60. What do you want me to do, man? I'm fucking 65 years old. I'm 67. I'm 70. I'm 95 fucking years old. You want me to go to war?
I'm 200 years old. I'm the oldest man alive.
I'm 427 years old, and I have an ornate
Moses.
Chair.
It was a lie. Moses never died.
How can you expect me to go to war?
But it's true. I get it. I get his point.
I do too, I guess. Anyway,
I do like that. This entire episode is Rick finding his guts again and getting rebuffed by everybody. Where he's like, "All right, I got my balls back. Let's go fight." And they're like, "No, hell no, dude."
Hey, Michonne. Check out what I found underneath the cushions right in there with the rest of the dirt and the gum wrappers and the cat toys. I found my balls.
Finally.
Finally. Don't I seem so much more attractive right now? I don't know. Something like that.
You want to get back on that couch and get sweaty again?
Let me rub my banana all over your back and give maybe a couple strawberries across your lips. How's that sound, girl?
Whatever fucking weird fruit thing they were doing.
Fucking apple sex, what they were having last time.
Let me shoot my apple up across your backside.
Okay, if you say so. Pull out your
Hope
apple.
Hope you like hot cider. Ooh.
Shit. Jesus. Let me take my raspberries and dangle
them around. Boy, you know, I was really following the show until the 10-minute food fetish sex scene. God, it was so graphic. I couldn't believe they were getting away with it on Basic Cable.
I don't know if you noticed, I could eat a peach for hours.
My tongue never gets tired.
Let me put my pomegranates on you.
All right, I'm done. I'm done.
My field of very tiny fruits.
I don't know. Yeah.
Moving on.
Let me take a walk through the wheat fields.
Okay. Now it's just getting silly. All right. So I don't know. I guess it's, I guess I kind of get his position. And then Maggie is, you know, being Maggie.
Pretty much.
You know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah, Maggie's. How many people can we spire? Because look at me. I got my fingerless gloves. I got my Levi's rolled up. I got my baseball hat on. Got my dead boyfriend hat.
Introducing Gap's new dead boyfriend hat. Better than boyfriend jeans.
You're sure to get a sympathy lay. And then Tara is all like, when people have a chance to do something, they usually step up. And he's like, let me stop you right there before we break into fucking song and dance.
That, dude, that fucking so line good. Got me. I was like, that's good. Like, cut your inspirational poster bullshit. Like, I'm not going to die because, I don't meet your standard of people stepping up.
Who's going to train these people? Rhetorical. He's such a douche.
That's the thing. Yeah, I've heard, like, I agree with you on this. Like, there are a lot of complaints out there of, like, oh, this guy's just such an asshole. He's such a coward. He's so over the top. I'm like, no, he's just an asshole. Like, he is consistent in his character. And I wouldn't call him over the top. I think he's just consistently an alcoholic dickhead. Like,
he's sitting on a desk, a big giant desk with a fucking beard brush and, like, manuals and ornate lighting around him. He's fine. He's not good. And then you got Rick and Daryl doing the back-to-back false dichotomies, right?
Is this world better with or without the saviors?
Well, you know, that doesn't really mean anything. And then you got fucking Daryl. Daryl goes fucking 2003 George W.
You're either with us or against us.
I was like, damn, man.
I know we gotta fight the axis of evil.
I know who he voted for. That was fucking classic. So good. Oh God. Good Lord. Anyway. So it's cool. I like it. It's a good time. It's a good scene. I enjoyed it. And then they just sort of he just says, "All right, let's get back out in the world. Get out of there." She just says a couple bad annoying things. She pisses me off. But
I did, you know, I like this is the one of the first. I feel like we've talked about this a little bit in the first half of the season, but I hope that it really comes to the forefront this time around. And this episode is a good indicator that there's going to be kind of like an occupied France sense of intrigue going on and like double talk. Like, I like how he's saying it's not just, all right, yeah, I don't want to help, get out. He's saying this meeting never happened. Like, you cannot be seen. You need to go out the back. Like, you people are fucking, you've got the scarlet letter on you. Like, we cannot be seen with you. And I love, you know, some of the scenes later on where their interactions with the saviors now have this very, you know, double-faced quality of, like, they know that they are now actively planning against them. The French resistance is forming, and they're having to also still pretend like they're kowtowing. Like, that whole dynamic, I think, could be really cool, and I like that they're going that way.
Yeah. In the chat room, they're talking about, could it be one of the saviors in the car with Father G? I'm just sort of scrolling. There's a lot of chatting going on here. Can't pick up on all of it. But they're thinking it might not be the same boot as the Oceanside girl. But why would he choose Father G for form an alliance with? Maybe Dwight's in the car. It definitely looked like somebody with longer hair. What do you think about
Interesting.
That?
Interesting. Damn, I do like the idea of it possibly being a savior. I don't know if it would specifically be Dwight. I mean, I guess that's the likely suspect in a way.
Yeah, but if you think about it, but again, this is too heroic of thinking. Dwight's the kind of guy who's not going to fucking go against. He's not going to go to the Alexandrians and get Father G of all people to try to start his coup against a guy who can squash Father G, right?
I feel like Dwight is the guy where in the moment where if, you know, Negan is being attacked and he's down on one knee looking up at Dwight like, help me, man.
If
Dwight
he's an opportunist.
Fuck you and knocks his head off.
He's an opportunist. If he could put a dagger in your back as the fucking kingdom crumbles, I could see something like that.
Cut off Macbeth's head as the fucking forest seizes his castle. Yeah, he'll do it.
Yeah. They're thinking maybe Dwight's wife. I guess that's a possibility. But again, what is there to get? What you have to ask yourself is that sometimes it's not just about, wouldn't this be cool? You have to think from that character's perspective, what is there to gain and what is there to lose? Everything to lose, right?
Totally. Your life.
What's there to gain? What's there possibly to gain in that situation? I'm not sure. But it's possible. I don't want to discount it entirely. It's possible she's fed up with fucking Negan and she's trying to do something or get out of there. Get the fuck out of there. You know, that's all I can think of.
There you go.
Yeah. But, I mean, where do you go? That's the problem is we're seeing this with Daryl. We're seeing this with Daryl now that he's loose. Negan's not going to just give up. He's going to continue to look for him everywhere, always, constantly.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's a because in his face, he can't handle that.
Absolutely. He can't. He can't for two reasons. Number one, because he's a sociopath. Number two, because he understands the importance of making sure that he continues to have his reign unquestioned. And that if you transgress, that you're going to lose. You're going to lose. You're going to be punished it's going to go bad for you.
It's the whole you can't steal from the mafia thing. It's like they can.
Of course.
You steal a fucking candy bar from a mafia controlled grocery store. Gonna fucking come after you because it's like it's just that they have to maintain that image of no one can take anything from us. We are untouchable,
right?
So you have to pursue even the pettiest shit to keep that up. And I agree that Negan would hunt fucking Daryl to the ends of the earth. I mean, Stephen Ogg, you know, the his character later on puts it really well of like, it doesn't matter, no statute of limitations on this. If we ever come across him being with you, that's it.
Yeah, he has a really creepy line later in the episode where he says something like, it's real important that you watch him die. Like, holy shit. Yeah.
Jesus
That's
Christ.
Fucking great line. But anyway, we have this great tracking shot as they walk out of this Gregory Katz's little castle here. And they step They step out onto the porch. A great shot. And then we see the fucking misfits from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer out here. Why am I such a misfit? They're all standing there.
Water gun shooting jelly or whatever.
Yeah, bunch of fucking humps in their fucking paid to order flannel. Every one of them's got flannel. Come on.
I'm just a sorghum farmer.
I'm tilling the earth for my fucking king. That's what I do. I toil away in the fields.
I'm just a medieval peasant.
I'm just toiling away in the fields. Got a damn strong back. Honest as trees are tall, though. So there's that. I could definitely help you get your muddy horse cart out of the road should you have an issue.
Good thing your daughter wore her hands down to bloody nubs in order to dig that rock up.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Good people. Good God-fearing people of the earth
That's right. Salt of the earth people right here, man. Got your blue collars, man. We're going to fight. We're gonna put aside our hoes and our shovels and our pickaxes. We're going to pick up our swords. And we got a really weird mixed metaphor, Dean, here with your southern accent and your medieval talk.
I'm a Roman peasant. You bet your ass.
You bet your ass, man. I'm tired of working for fucking plebeius, man. Plebeius is always fucking all them hot Spaniards, man. I'm tired of it. Tired of it. I want to fuck hot Spaniards. I want the hot Spaniards to fuck.
Where are all the Moors? Fucking Pontius Pilate killing Jesus.
At least with that accent, they said Moors. I'll give them that. Could have been worse. So anyway, we got this little scene where they're like, I knew you can fight. I want to fight the English. And they're standing there talking about fighting. And they're like,
this is all credited to Enid, of course, by the way.
Yeah, I caught that.
Enid rounded up the town. And, you know, and I read a handful of reviews on this episode. I don't usually read a ton. But one criticism I did actually agree with was, why is this moment handed off to Enid? Whereas it could have been, you know, you follow them in that great tracking shot outside, and the people are at the door, and they're saying, so what's going on? And then Maggie has this moment of stepping outside of the leadership of Gregory and being like, this is the situation. I think we can beat him. And like rallying the people herself, she had to have a go-between. She had to have a medium of Enid being like, here, everybody, come listen to her. Like, I was like, it could have been a better character moment from Maggie. And I do agree with that one.
Well, maybe it's because we like the king's daughter. We like the royal daughter.
I don't know. Good point. I like what you're saying here. Another great shot of them talking. And the thing I like about this scene is they sort of approach the foreground here, walking and talking and coming up with a plan. And Rosita just sort of being a grump. Talking about the geography working against us, his massive distances. We need more people. But you can almost see a sense of it's gone beyond utter hopelessness. And
totally.
You start to see a bit of confidence growing as they start to put things together, which is something that I like.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so
the way
kind of cool.
This whole, yeah, like you were saying, you know, this approach to the foreground, the way they're talking, it has this whole sense of, even if nobody else joins us, like, we are determined in the way of, if this is just a small guerrilla group trying to, you know, make trap attacks against them, then that's what it's going to be. Like, we're going to find a way to assault them, even if it's with small numbers. They're just truly actually determined again.
Yep. And then Jesus says some stuff about the radio they have, and he says, I'm going to introduce you to Ezekiel, King Ezekiel.
King.
Boom, boom, boom. And that's it. We move over to Rick and Co. getting to the kingdom. Right? Jesus talks some kind of gibberish here again.
Yeah, that's okay. This is my
gibberish
first
talk from him. Gibberish.
Yeah. Where I'm like, okay, why are you talking like this? Where he's like, we're here. Well, we're always here, but here we are at the kingdom. I'm like, what? Is this supposed to be a character moment? Fucking babble talk?
Do you need fucking Ritalin, kid? Like, what's your problem?
Yeah.
There's a couple moments like that. He just, I don't know. He bothered me this week.
I think he got under a lot of people's skin this week.
Yeah. So, Richard shows up, right? Isn't that this guy's name?
Yes. And dude, I like Richard this
episode.
Me too. I think he is a standout, especially as far as the kingdom goes.
Yeah, he's
it's him
awesome.
And Ezekiel that I give a shit about here.
And they
and Morgan,
fucking,
of course.
They clop up on their horses, right?
The funniest tidbit of dialogue here is when he's like, halt ye, how are you past? Oh, shit. Like, he's like, oh, it's you.
That's funny.
That was good. That's funny shit. I love when they have to drop the fucking Camelot facade.
Yeah. Richard, otherwise known as Shitty Liam Neeson.
I thought that was the governor.
I have a very particular set of skills. He dismounts.
And it's riding horses and BMX gear.
Yeah. He fucking, where's my daughter? He dismounts, brandishing a pistol. It's a little aggressive. A little aggressive. And he tells everybody to get out of the car, line up. And then I like how Jared's like, fuck this. We're out of here. Right? I thought that was kind of cool. But
it is very Daryl, but I am also like, shut up, Daryl. Come on. You can't blow off an opportunity like this quickly. Got to give it a second.
But you know Rick's pretty desperate here. This is something I don't think he does in the past, which is disarm himself.
Yeah.
He was very much against that unless he was being threatened. And he knows that this talk is crucial. Critical. It's a critical talk.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I like that this is a Rick who is on the upswing as far as energy and determination goes. He's ready to act against these people instead of just bowing down. But that he truly does realize that numbers are everything. Like, you're not – I mean, you mount a smaller attack, you have to be even more strategic about it. And maybe you'll inflict some heavy damage. Maybe you'll even get Negan. But the cost is going to be so high to actually mount a real offensive and win – you need numbers, and like whoever you're negotiating with who's going to be bodies on your side, you're going to have to really be the, you know, you are the person who will compromise, not them.
Yeah. And we get this little bit of dialogue with Richard, right? Saying we got something we got to deal with before anything. And Jesus says that silly, like, you're going to smile, dude.
Jesus is going to put a smile on that face.
Yeah. Whip it out, big boy. is that why they call you Richard?
So inside the kingdom, we get the familiar tracking shots of life in the medieval city, right?
Yeah.
We've seen this before. I like what we see these guys jogging, like a training regime. That's kind of neat. Dude, I
really liked that. I was like, because, I mean, even you think about it, too, nobody, I would put $1 million on not a single soul at the Savior's compound jogs laps and does burpees in the morning. You know all those fucks are hungover on, like, booze they scavenged.
Right.
They're like, well, off to smoke more cigarettes I found and beat people with the butt of a rifle. Like, that's my workout routine.
Yeah.
I like this.
They ponder if they can fight, meaning the group is looking around, and then Morgan shows up. Hey, oh, fucking Morgan chops. Oh, Millie Morgs.
I still fucking love my Morgan. I actually really liked his return here in this scene, but the thing that threw me a little bit was, like, Tara was the one who was like, Morgan? And I was like, did you really know him? Did they have many scenes together?
They described you. I must be you.
I've heard so much about you.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
But no, I'm like, hey, of course, Morgan, here, cool.
We learn he gives the group some information about Carol. You know, she's fine, but she wanted to get away from everyone. Bada bing, bang, boom. We got doctors here. And, you know, she took off again because she's Carol.
Yep. But she's, this man, fucking Lenny James, is damn well maybe one of the best actors on the show. Top.
He's great. Yeah, he's
fucking
great.
He nails this. I loved this exchange here between him and Rick, and I love Rick's reaction of him being, you know, he's standing there with Rick and Daryl, and Daryl is the one taking this news really harshly because it's about Carol, and Carol actually chose to leave, and you can see that, you know, wearing on him. But I love how when he has to say, I killed him, he turns to Rick and is looking Rick right in the face like, I killed him, I had to. And like, Rick, you can see not all of that trust just come right back, but you can see him like, okay, we've finally jumped this fucking hurdle. Like, okay,
right,
you've done it. All right, again. And like, I like that there's a little bit of that trust built back up again here, and it's questioned again in the next scene. But it was a good. Lenny James just makes it right.
Yeah, crazy. We get to Ezekiel's throne room, and I love how Rick's entire group lingers at the back of the theater because of the fucking giant killing feline at the front of the room. Tiger. They're all hanging back. It's amazing to watch. I love it. It's so realistic. I was so happy that they treated the fucking massive predator with the respect it deserved, because it would fucking just kill everybody, right?
Oh,
if
absolutely.
It wants to kill everyone in the room, it's going to, which is fucking insane. I like how Rick's like, oh, tiger.
Tiger.
So here's a fact I just heard on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast that I frequently listen to. He has these wildlife conservationists on his last episode, and he's talking a lot about hunting and conservation and stuff, and he was giving this insane fact that is going to blow your fucking mind. So again, I got this from that podcast. I didn't actually research this. I just heard it on a podcast, so here it is. In did you know that there are more tigers in captivity than there are in the wild?
Jesus, really?
Yes. And do you know where?
Wait, like where they are in the wild or not captivity?
In captivity.
Oh, mostly America?
Yep. Do you know what state?
What? No. Oh my God.
Okay. And when I say captivity, I mean personal owners.
No.
Individuals. What? Dude.
Texas.
Yes.
Then Texas.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Fucking in Texas. People own more tigers that they have as pets than there are in the fucking wild, because Texas is kind of loose with them animal laws.
Damn, that actually makes me want to become a PETA terrorist.
No, but it's crazy because like I imagine they treat them like fucking gold because they're not. But they're cheap. I think you get them for like $1,000. They were saying on that podcast. And they're like, what? The guy's like, what are they fucking, like, even the conservationist was like, I've never even heard of this before. Like, Rogan enlightened them. It was crazy. And I thought of that as soon as we saw Shiva over here.
What dark corner of Craigslist are people fucking finding their way into to be like, yeah, dude, I'll take a Siberian for $1,000.
Tigers, man.
Because I'm a Texan, yeehaw.
They're like, they must just feed it a cow, like a dead, right? slaughtered cow.
They just kick a cow into their, like, pasture where this tiger is just somewhere roaming.
But these owners are rich as fuck. Like, one of them was like the former chief of police of one of the big cities down there in Texas. And he's like, we're proud to announce, you put on Instagram or something, our second baby in the family is fucking 700-pound cat. Fucking ridiculous. So crazy, right?
That's insane.
Oh, man. Imagine you break into some fucking dude's house.
Right.
Like, oh, fuck.
Chases you down and rips the back tire off your Nissan as you're fleeing. Just like, dude, Jesus.
Just swatch your tire off. Fucking hell, man.
Damn.
Anyway, I thought you'd get a fucking kick out of that.
It's crazy and fucking sad.
It's insane, dude.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, there's people do fucking horrible shit to those things in the wild.
True.
But, yeah, crazy scene of them going up and talking to Ezekiel. But again, Ezekiel shining.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, God, this man. And I had forgotten that his stage background had a castle painted on it. I was like, oh, fuck yeah. Hell yes, Ezekiel, you bombastic theatrical son of a bitch. Love it.
Yeah, crazy. LSK is saying he doesn't believe me, but. Or he's saying it might can't be accurate because he's never seen him. Back to the tiger thing. Just Google it. Google.
Even if you've lived in Texas your whole life, you've probably only seen a 50th of Texas.
No
Who
shit,
knows what
right?
crazy section of Texas is tiger country?
Yeah, no shit. Some place right on the fucking border there, man.
Hell
yeah. I tell you what, you jumped that fucking fence, man. You're taking a risk. I'll send my fucking cat after your ass, man. I don't know. You can Google it and look it up. Maybe I'm wrong, but they were literally reading the articles on the podcast as they were talking about it. But crazy shit, man. Fucking tiger. So I like how Rick's like, we have trouble. We beat one level, man. We beat one level of the Saviors, but we need to kind of grow our party so we can up our level and get more skills. You know what I mean? And get a bigger party and go after the next level of the Saviors compound, man.
Going to have to go on some raids, build up XP, get better weaponry.
Yeah, and Ezekiel's like, I will not involve myself in the white man's wars. He's not interested in this bullshit. He also doesn't even fucking know Rick, right?
That's the real thing.
He's taking Jesus' word for it, who already betrayed his trust. He's like, I told you not to tell, like, you're sharing this.
But we can help each other. I'm Jesus.
Yeah.
Rick's like, I got, like, these 400-pound girls, this shitty kid with one eye. And these other guys, I'm thinking, man, we can all fight together, man. We could team up, you know what I mean? And he's like, Rick Grimes of Alexandria, you're a damn fool, man. You're a damn fool. A fool's errand, man.
An idiot.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's not buying it at first. But and then Morgan, right? Good old Morgan.
I like,
no
you
confidence.
Know, I like this hesitation on Morgan's part, though. It is Morgan.
It's in character.
It's totally, but you can just see the disappointment wash over Rick's face of like, God damn it, you're fence riding. You're not taking that side with me that you needed to push because you know, this is the only guy in the room where Ezekiel is like, you, what are your thoughts on it?
Sure.
I want your opinion. Your opinion matters to me. And he's like, well, I'm like, well, if you don't know me, I don't really like killing. And this is going to be a lot of killing.
Or just and death. He's like, a lot of people are going to die, and that's just the way it goes. Maybe we can capture him.
And he's fucking right. But also, I mean, what do you think of that idea? Do you think it, or not even necessarily, I would have loved to hear Rick's change, the Rick's remix on this idea of, well, how about we just try to assassinate Negan himself? Like, let's just try to kill that guy. We don't have to mount some gigantic offensive. So maybe they fall apart after that.
So here's part of the problem. Part of the problem with this problem is that Rick does not have a plan, okay? So part of the selling point of recruiting people into this offensive is to say, here's the plan. We have a good indication. Right. We get a good indication as to how many people you have, what kind of weaponry you have, your willingness to fight. Here's what we have at Hilltop. Here's the type of weaponry we have. Here's what we can do. Here's a plan that we've cooked up. Here's an idea that we have. Because it's dangerous to talk sedition when you don't really have a plan in place, because if there's a spy in there and things go tits up, you're going to get got. They're going to get you for even suggesting it. That's what happens. Your revolution will get fucking crushed because you're just sitting around talking about it and there's just too many spies around. I got to believe there's spies in these camps. I think that Rick needs to just have a better plan. I think the assassination of Negan is definitely a potential move. I personally think that Negan's group, and we've talked about this in the past, really relies on his leadership before really going at each other. That they've shown us as much in the day-to-day lives about how a guy just gets killed over something and Dwight is watching TV while it happens. So I think that I think assaulting Negan's camp maybe isn't really the answer. I don't know. I have no idea how it's going to happen. I'm sure they'll make it happen the right way when the time comes. But there are times when if you can get weapons and you can set up an ambush and these fuckers come to collect, you can kill every one of them with really little to no resistance, right? If Negan shows up again with a convoy of trucks and a bunch of guys just start walking in the front gates, and then you have a bunch of people set up in positions with guns, and they walk in all braggadocious like they do with their guns by their sides, holding their weapons, just walking out in the fucking open down the main road of Alexandria. That to me is like a goddamn kill fest. That's just like shoot the shit out of them. If you have enough guns and enough people and they don't know it's coming, they're fucked. I think assaulting a compound is so much harder. I mean, I know they did it at the satellite one. I know they had a plan. I know all that stuff. But if you could take Negan and say 15 to 20 guys out, the reason they don't do that is because the Alexandrians the saviors just must be too many. Like maybe they would rally, and you, despite you killing Negan and Dwight and all these other like head honchos that come on these runs, which maybe is why we haven't seen Negan in a while. Maybe he isn't going to go. If I'm Negan, I don't fucking go.
Right. Totally.
That's so dangerous.
So fucking dangerous.
I feel like every time you go, you're gonna run into a Rosita person who just doesn't care and gonna take a shot at you. Maybe Negan won't show his face after that incident with Rosita, because at any moment, at any time, somebody desperate enough who says, "My life as we know it is over. I'm gonna fucking kill this guy no matter what. Like I'm willing to die to kill this guy." That totally. People will do that shit. They already do that shit. These people who walk on stage and assassinate people at podiums, they know their life is over. They know their life is over, right?
Yep.
And I just feel like that's it. You know, it's crazy. It's a crazy situation. So I don't know. Yeah. I feel like the best success is coordinated attacks on multiple people in multiple locations.
The direction that I think they indicate with them focusing on the importance of all those explosives, I think we're going to see some fucking Viet Cong style traps and ambushes and stuff. And I think that is the route they need to go. I mean, if you knew they were coming on a certain day and you just had a guy up in a tree with binoculars, a remote detonator, and you have fucking TNT all up the road, you wait for the convoy to just to get in the middle of it and hit it, that'd be it.
Yeah, you could do so much damage by ambushing them. But the problem is they don't have firearms. So they can't, they just don't stand a chance. Like, not only are they outnumbered, but they also do not have the weapons that they need. We know where those are going to come from. The Oceanside crew has a fucking safe, a shed of weapons, which is going to be a total game changer. But going at Negan's compound seems like such a huge risk to me. It would be so hard to get in to assail it. It's huge. Exactly. It's massive. They're going to see you coming from so far away.
Seems like you want to draw them out somehow.
Yeah, somehow you got to draw them out. And then maybe when you draw them out, you send a fucking crack team, right, in somehow, some sort of stealth team. I don't fucking know. I have no fucking clue.
Well, we're jumping to the season finale already.
I have no fucking clue how you do it, okay? No clue. But I do know that I can understand Gregory and Ezekiel's hesitation here. especially Ezekiel. Ezekiel's like, first of all, they don't even set foot in my territory. Yeah. Yes, we have an uneasy alliance with them, but we don't. I mean, what's there to gain for me? I don't. There's nothing really terribly wrong in my setup. We haven't seen Ezekiel impacted by the fuckery of Negan just yet. Which, if you want to be a real cornball when you're writing, you show us something that happened next week, which will be stupid. Like, oh, then something terrible happens. Ezekiel, he changes his mind. That's like shitty. Hopefully, right. Something better comes of it. But
true. But I like that Rick is coming at him with the perspective of it's not even just about him doing things to you. It's that you are supporting this person by being, you know, one of his, you know, colonies, essentially, you know, giving him stuff. You're supporting him and he's out there ruling through violence and fear and wrecking lives. And you're tacitly, you know, helping him do that. And but that's a big, you know, as a ruler of a place. And this is where I think this is a miscalculation on Rick's part. Actually, I want to get into the whole story that Rick tells him. I think that's the best example of his, you know, miscalculation here. But he's talking to him as a ruler. So what comes first for him always is the people he rules. Like, that's what he's thinking of.
Of course.
Like, this whole story that Rick tells, you know, and like you were saying, it's kind of problematic anyways of just the whole layout of it's kind of wonky. And you're like, that's what you're going to convince me with? But like, you know, basically Rick sees that whole story from the girl's point of view, the little girl in the story about, you know, doing the right thing, even if it's painful or dangerous, and doing it right now so that even if you suffer that, you know, other people won't, hopefully. That's the whole goal. And the king of the story is kind of just an afterthought for him. Like him, you know, it's almost like proof at the end of the story of being like, see, even a king would reward an action so, you know, brave. But the thing is, I think Ezekiel sees it totally opposite. You know, he's seeing the story as the king's point of view, which he's a fucking king. Like, Rick should have seen this coming. He's seeing the king as a bad king, that he was, you know, arbitrary, unfair, put a fucking reward under a rock just to kind of prove an abstract, like, moral point to, like, somebody out there will survive this fucking thing I've put in the road that's killed so many people's lives needlessly so that I can prove a point that a good Samaritan will rise when the occasion comes. I think that's the part Ezekiel's focusing on of, like, I don't want to be that king. I don't want to be the guy who puts my people's lives at risk just for the sake of being a good person. And in some abstract sense, he'd be like, no, like, I've put my people's lives on the line. You know,
100%.
The scene that follows, I think, is a great follow-up to it. I totally agree with you that I love that he says no. Of, like, his whole, you know, thought throughout the night is, yeah, I've done this. I've put my people's lives on the line needlessly, and people suffered and were hurt and were killed. And what did we really prove? What did we really gain out of this? Like,
nothing.
Nothing. Like, I didn't gain anything. Do I need to do this? And so I love that basically Rick's story convinced him of the opposite. Of, like, yeah, don't be a king who would just so heedlessly throw your people in the line of fire. I think that's, you know, Rick is just seeing it from such a different angle. He doesn't even understand. He's convincing him of exactly the opposite.
Right. Now, the way the actual story goes for the King's Highway is that the person who cleans the rocks and the king are both considered pretty awesome people. Because in the original story, it was about a king who had this great highway built for the members of his kingdoms. And after it was completed, but before it was open, he decided to have a contest. And what he did was he put all these rocks in the middle of the road because he wanted to test the people's resolve. Now, it didn't hurt or kill people because that's why Rick's story is so weird. Like, what do you mean they fucking died on the rock? Are they idiots? Are they blind? Go around the fucking rock. And that's his point. All these like courtly types and rich, fancy types all complained like, oh, you've got to move the rocks. We're all dirty, blah, 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 blah. And they all came back to the king. And then this one guy was like, I'm going to move these fucking rocks. So he moves all the rocks. He clears it to make the pathway into the kingdom easier instead of making it a little more treacherous where people get dirty and they get delayed and they get upset and it interferes with their royal lives. And then this guy goes, oh, whoa, a bag of gold is in here. This is the king's because we're in the king's land. So he takes the gold and he brings it to the king. And he says to the king, I found your gold. And he says, you found your gold. And the king's point is he's teaching him that you made it a conscious decision to make things easier for these people. And all they did was complain.
So, bunch of whiners.
Right. That's his fucking point. Like, you stepped up. That's how the actual story went as far as I can remember.
Yeah.
Whereas Rick's like, he was a king and he left it and people got hurt and broke and died. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I don't think that's how it went, Rick, but whatever works for you, buddy.
I mean, I guess that, you know, the point that he's going for still mostly stands up, like somebody has to step up and do right. Even
yes.
if nobody else will, you know.
Yes, that's what he's talking about.
Do that. But yeah, it's still, I like that Ezekiel just sees it, you know, not as an individual, but as a leader of people and of saying, it doesn't matter about me doing right or what I think is, you know, the most abstract, correct ethical decision. I still have to consider the actual lives of hundreds of people and, you know, what their interests are.
Right. Yeah. It's a crazy situation because Rick's group, it seems, is being the most abused. And that's why Rick is so motivated to change something. We haven't seen any of that come to Ezekiel's group, and we've only heard about it at Hilltop, right? I mean, yeah, we did see the zombies get let in and shit.
But that's the only aggression we've seen against them, other right. than Simon showing up and just being a shithead.
Sure.
I'm going to put my feet up on stuff and not respect your nice things.
That's and take much... your alcohol.
Right.
I mean, they're transgressing, don't get me wrong. But
oh, yeah, shitheads.
It's, what Rick has is freshly witnessed is nothing that Ezekiel has had any dealings with. It's just a totally different situation. And I feel like that's something that is cool to see. I mean, yeah. we did see Richard get motivated because they beat him up, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They beat Richard up, so he's motivated. He was out there. He knows what's going on, which is why he's felt it, whereas Ezekiel really hasn't felt it, at least based on what they've shown us.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and he says it exactly that. He's like, the peace we have with the Saviors is uneasy, but it's peace. You know, we're not experiencing suffering because of it.
Right. So one, let me see. Oh, here's the whole King story. Ready? Their challenge was to see who could travel the highway the best. On the day of the contest, the people came. Some had chariots, some had clothing, some had great hairdos, great food. Some young men came in their track clothes and ran along the highway. People traveled the highway all day, but each one, when he arrived at the end, complained to the king that there was a large pile of rocks and debris on the road on one spot that got in their way and hindered their travel. At the end of the day, a lone traveler crossed the finish line wearily and walked over to the king. He was tired and dirty. He addressed the king with great respect and handed him a bag of gold. He explained, "I stopped along the way to clear a pile of rocks and the debris was blocking the road. This bag of gold was under it. I want to return it to its rightful owner." The king replied, "You are the rightful owner." The traveler replied, "Oh, no, this is not mine. I've never known such money." "Oh, yes," said the king, "you've earned this gold, for you've won my contest. He who travels the road best is he who makes the road smoother for those to follow."
Ah.
There you go.
There we are.
So.
Royal tales indeed.
Yes. I have a falcon at my wrist as I tell that story. So Ezekiel asks, he says, "Stay and sup with me," right?
Sup upon our breads and fruits.
Yes, fill your bellies with my kingly wares. he will deliver his decree. Of course, it's a decree in the morning.
Of course.
And then Benjamin runs into Carol out in the woods. She's like, "Go home. I hate you."
I'm a badass and you're a little shit.
Benjamin tells Carol he's checking on her behalf on the king. He didn't explicitly order it, but Benjamin says that he knows the king, which is kind of cool. And Carol's like, "Well, leave and keep quiet and heel to toe. I heard you from a mile away, little shithead." But I thought what I liked about this scene is that obviously they're trying to develop this Benjamin character for a nice thirsty death.
For just a blood fountain of a death.
Yeah, just a fucking spray, arterial spray death. They're setting him up for that. But I like how he has this relationship with Ezekiel. And he is right. Is this the linchpin? Is Ezekiel? Is Benjamin's death the precipitous moment for Ezekiel to become motivated? Probably, but
I hope not. But you're probably right.
They killed my white son.
Killed my honky boy.
My honky boy was so good. I hated his whack ass hair, but he will do. I don't know. Sorry.
All right, slay them all. Kill the saviors.
I love my dead white son. But yeah, they're setting him up for dead. But I like how he says to Carol, like, "I know him. I know he'd want me to check up on you." That's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, how long is Carol going to be like this, though? I'm still kind of like, come on, Carol.
Like, what? Get off my lawn, Carol?
Yeah, just fucking Gran Torino, Carol. Just fuck everything. Ah.
I don't want any of those kids on my lawn.
I'm just going to sit here and drink paps and stare in the sun.
Especially any of those non-white ones.
Well, I don't
know. Until I learn my lesson at the end.
Now we have the most multicultural Thanksgiving you've ever seen.
Before I'm animated head to toe with bullets. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's a good car.
Well, great car.
Can't deny the
good
car.
Movie, great car, though. So stupid. Good, oh, my God.
Good movie, but that fucking car, dude.
Good movie, fucking great car.
Yeah. That's, dude, if we're the marketing department for Gran Torino, good movie, great car. Oh, shit,
so
son.
Fucking ridiculous. Jesus Christ. That's what you guys bring us. That's how we're going to sell this movie. It's going to be the next big hit for Paramount. Good movie, great car. You're saying the movie's shittier than the car? We're selling the movie.
We have another tagline. That old white guy ain't bad at the end.
Not at the end. That old shitty white guy gets not so shitty by the end. It's a little unwieldy of a tagline.
It doesn't quite flow as good movie, great car. All right.
Fuck.
Ezekiel teaches MLK.
All right, so back to our coverage of Gran Torino.
Right, let's get over to Ezekiel teaching MLK to his other white kid.
It's a good scene.
It's a great scene. He's awesome. I'm busting his balls.
I'm totally on board for Ezekiel.
I'm breaking Ezekiel's balls, but he's probably my favorite character right now. I don't know. I like him a lot. He's cool. I like him. He's got presence. He has
just something to watch.
Yeah, he's just fun. He commands the screen, man.
Totally.
Can't say the same about the rest of his can't get rights, but he's doing it, right?
Totally. Perfect casting.
So we have Benjamin lingering, right? As he tells the, free at last, free at last. Benjamin lingers. He and Ezekiel talk. Benjamin's proud of his training. He mentions seeing Carol. Ezekiel asks if she was well. He almost asks if she asked about him, right? Did you get that impression?
Totally.
It was cute.
Did thou pass a note to her on mine behalf?
Did you hand her the
Carol,
drawing?
Carol, does thou liketh me? Check yes or no.
Did you send Carol the drawing that the bard made of my dangling majesty? It might seem a bit intimidating at first from its sheer size, but I think she'll come around.
I've enclosed some detailed instructions of stretches you can do to prepare yourself.
Jesus Christ. And unsubscribe. Benjamin thinks they should say yes to Rick.
Yeah.
Right?
He does.
You saw their eyes. They're going to risk everything, whether we help them or not.
Yeah.
That's my Benjamin voice. It's pretty good.
That's pretty much it. And I get, this is another one of those times where, you know, I got to give the show credit here because I can see this both ways. Benjamin's, you know, argument is essentially that these people are desperate. They are under, even if we have a more amenable situation with the Saviors, these people don't, and they are being oppressed and savaged by them, and they are going to risk it all to fight them regardless of what we do. Mm-hmm. It kind of puts the moral burden on you of like, are you going to let them march off to a really one-sided battle that maybe they win but probably not? Or do you throw your hat in the ring and help and really tilt the tide of war towards them and really take that stand? But that, again, is still a pretty abstract argument. Just because somebody else is marching off to war doesn't mean you fucking have to. Like, okay, they're desperate and they need to, but that doesn't just inherently force our hand. So I see it both. Like, I love how for the majority of the scene, Ezekiel is silent. He's just listening. Like, and he doesn't give him any judgment on what he says. He just says, thank you for your sage counsel. Your father would be proud. Like, just, you know, I can tell you've been thinking long and hard about this. I can tell you care. That's basically what he's saying, even though he disagrees.
The stakes are so high.
So high.
It's not like, okay, we're going to grab a bunch of troops. We're going to go to now. Make no mistake about it. Stakes are very high in these situations because it's your lives and the lives of your comrades. You know, you fucking throw yourself on a boat, go to another country, fucking kill a bunch of people, come home. Now, if you don't win there, you're going to die and it's going to be terrible and your friends are going to die and people that rely on you are all going to die. And those are pretty fucking high stakes. But these stakes are, if you lose, all these women and all these kids and all your family members and all your friends die.
die. Brutally,
everybody
violently.
Dies. Everybody. Yeah. There's no, oh, fuck, all your friends and family and fucking workmates and all those people back home in your regular life are going to miss you. It's no, they're going to die. So the stakes are so fucking high for Ezekiel. If he commits and they lose, they all die.
Totally. Yeah.
It's insane, man. I mean, that's huge.
Like in this scene too, just, you know, Ezekiel and Benjamin, it's like, it's the old man, the older man's view and the young man's view of like, you haven't been through a battle or a war yet. You have this more idyllic idea of, no, we got to do the right thing, and we're going to be heroes. Or, and he, you know, that's exactly what he says, actually. He says, my dad told me when you're asked to be a hero, you should be the hero. And it's like, you see this older guy who has built this place from the ground up and watched people suffer of like, yeah, that's a fun thing to say. That's a nice, pretty sounding sentence to say, kid. But I got to worry about fucking children getting their arms torn off. All right. Like, you have the luxury of getting to think that, and I don't.
And he thanks him for his sage counsel, which is cute, and says he's proud. The next morning, we get some nice classical guitar in this fucking bizarro world medieval town walkthrough where kids are doing archery and shit. Ezekiel has a little speech. This is life here. He recounts a battle against the Wasted, how it was not needed, it was a mistake. You already kind of went through all that. Ezekiel says that he can't help them, and then he does offer Daryl asylum, right?
Pretty solid offer of him, by the way. He didn't have to do that shit.
Think about it. He's putting his whole kingdom in jeopardy with Daryl there.
Totally is. Yeah.
Daryl is a goddamn wanted man.
Oh, yeah.
And harboring him is death.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah, if that's
you're
ever
gonna get
found
punished.
Out.
You're going to surely get punished.
Yeah. Your only hope would be if, you know, if somehow, and I did, it's probably my favorite line from Daryl, because a lot of times, you know, he's in full tilt Daryl mode right now, just abrasive and not, like, really not even thinking. He's just like,
not as bad as Rosita, though, I will say that.
Oh, no, that's a whole other fucking can of worms there. Jesus. But I liked Daryl's line of like, you know, he's like, well, the saviors do not enter these walls. He's like, how long do you think that's going to last? Like, they have it right now, because the saviors are the people in control of your agreement. If anybody, like fucking Darth Vader, if anybody decides to change the terms arbitrarily, it's them, not you. Like, maybe one day they're like, no, you know what? We're coming in today and we're taking more shit than we usually do. And if you don't like that, we'll just roll up with fucking 300 more guys and kill your people. Like, they always have that in their back pocket. Regardless of whatever kind of fancy formal agreement you have with them, they have the arbitrary use of force constantly there.
Mm, right, for sure. And then Rick tells Daryl to stare him into submission. That was cute. Whatever it takes, he says. And then we get this real long fade to black, which is cool because it's very transitory for the first half of the episode, which is talkie talks. To the second half of the episode, which is killy kills.
Actually actions.
And then we get this little, what's the word I'm looking for? Eulogy for Fat Joey. He was not the most badass son of a bitch, but he was loyal. He had a great sense of humor. We were just joking about Lucille and oral sex the other day. Without Fat Joey, Skinny Joey's just Joey. It's a goddamn tragedy. I like this. I like this little radio spot by my main man here.
I did like it. Yeah.
It was cool. Rick and Co. come upon this roadblock of sorts, and they spot Negan's place with binoculars. The whole time they're looking at Negan's place, I'm thinking to myself, Negan's got a guy up there with binoculars looking at you, right? There's no fucking way he doesn't have eyes on that road.
Or just patrols in general, just people around.
Yeah. I mean, you got to, with the right binoculars, you're going to definitely see that road from that tower up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big enough rifle scope, you can see that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So what do you think about this scene? Talk to me a little bit about your opinions here.
You know, where it ends up, I really, really like. Like, the ratcheting up of the tension, it has that kind of, you know, thriller, saboteur, espionage feel to it. And I really, really like that. Them racing the clock. Them, they have the zombies pressing down on them. They have the saviors not being able, you know, they cannot let the saviors know that they've been out here in this area, you know, doing these things. They have to always pretend that they're either at home or off scavenging for them. Just those aspects of why they're behaving the way they behave here are really cool. I'll admit, though, my first time around on this, I was a little bit confused at moments of just like, wait, what's the goal again? Like, you're getting, we have to move the car back to Not Disturbed. Like, it got a little unwieldy, just the amount of we have to do this because of this going on. But overall, like, just the tension of it, just the we have to get these supplies and we're racing the clock, we're racing them to get back to Alexandria. Those elements were all really, really fun.
Yeah. So the road's blocked, but I think they make a conscious decision that they're going to pilfer these explosives.
Oh, yeah.
Which means somebody's going to know that these explosives were taken. There's no way that they're going to pass through here without something being disturbed and it being pretty obvious. And then it gets real gratuitous in terms of the disturbance in question.
Well, I think, so you know, and I kept thinking that too, of like, okay, well, if you guys take all of these explosives.
If you take one.
Yeah, or well, yeah, yeah. But it's like you take, well, let's just go, if you take them all and the herd, and a herd actually does plow through and just goes by it, then they're going to be going, why the fuck didn't I blow up? Who took all these explosives? What happened? But I did know, you know, it didn't dawn on me until later on that when they're driving away, you see that big explosion. Like, I guess there were still enough explosives left to detonate against that herd, and that therefore makes it the perfect cover. Like, they were able to take a whole bunch, it looks like, but enough still went off to where the Sabres would see that and go, okay, well, it worked. Like, you know, our you know, dynamite went off there, did its job. A herd pressed against it and blew it up. You wouldn't really be able to tell at that point. You wouldn't be able to pilfer out how many were taken or not taken. I think after that, they're kind of in the clear.
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself because they have that. I guess we're supposed to believe that dynamite is that some of any of it that's physically damaged, cut or broken, or anything like that is a liability. It could go off automatically, which is why Rosita, who, by the way, is a demolitions expert, I had no idea.
I remember thinking that for a second of like, you know this? But then I was like, well, between Eugene and Abraham, yeah, I could imagine her having some pretty technical.
I was thinking with Abraham for sure that she might have some experience with explosives.
Oh, but and you know, like, Eugene had the fucking anarchist cookbook. Like, yeah, right. I'm going to tank her with a pot bomb, like, for sure.
And I know Abraham's military experience. Maybe he had some demolitions training. I don't know. But she's pretty confident, and it's fine. It didn't make me too crazy.
No, yeah, I liked it. I was fine.
But she starts shouting orders and talking about it. I kind of like how she takes charge here and does something instead of just being a bitch the whole time.
It was a nice, just being a big old nasty grumpus.
And then Sasha's the one who brings up the idea, like, we need these explosives, and Rick's like, yeah, but we have to figure out how to disarm it first, which is what they do. Because it's at this point where you need, if you want to fight, I don't think they really give a fuck if they disturb this and they steal this stuff and Negan knows that somebody pilfered this line.
Yeah.
Because they must know that, I mean, they mow them all. I think what happens here is that they leave one behind, one that looks a little risque. It ends up going off. Even Rosita says it didn't like the way it looked. I think that combined with how much damage they did with the cars, which are going to be way out of place, right?
Oh, yeah.
If Negan's guys come here, I have a feeling they're going to be able to tell, like, something weird went down here. Nothing, this is not normal. Cars are moved. There's an explosion. This, yeah. You know, there's walkers cut in half way away from the explosion. I have to see the explosion again to know if they wanted us to believe that it was a big enough explosion to cover the whole thing.
It certainly did. I mean, it covered the width of the road. It was a big ass explosion.
Yeah, it was pretty big. So yeah, I don't know, but I think they get there and they're like, "Damn, we want these explosives." I think it became a "we want these explosives" because how else are we going to fight Negan?
Exactly, because they're thinking they're on their own at this point.
Dude, those explosions are game changers. That's dynamite. That's some game changing shit right there.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't. It does not take as much dynamite as you'd think to rival a nuclear explosion. Like, it's that shit is powerful.
Yeah, it's crazy. So they got a lot, and they got like, and it's like a total IED setup. They have like an RPG round stuck to the thing that they must have a way to trigger. But yeah, they got a bunch of fucking explosives, which are a real equalizer. A real game changer if you can get close to that place, you know.
But totally, you get one more dumb mission from Carl to hide in the back of a van. Except you just put a whole crate of DNT in there and hop out half a mile away. Let that roll in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, fuck.
they must visually check everything that goes in, but if they don't, woe to them, right?
Totally.
You could probably line the vehicle.
Right? Oh, man.
In the undercarriage, you could probably line the vehicle with explosives and use it. I mean, once you have those explosives, there's got to be an issue.
There's a lot of ways to skin this cat. Once you got that, you've got options now.
If Negan has any indication that any of them were taken, though, he's going to be on high alert, right?
I would imagine so. But, you know, when you think about it, as big as their operation is and as spread out as they are, they must encounter, you know, people, you know, shitheads like the wolves and stuff. Just like people who fuck with their stuff, steal a car here and there, siphon gas. Like, they are big enough to have, like, city-state problems. You know what I mean? Of, like, they have, like, administration issues.
What are they going
to
do with the homeless in the Savior's compound?
Exactly. They're like, well, how are we going to fucking just get all of our waste sewered out of here?
How many?
Like that's, they're big enough to be dealing with that crap.
Are you guys going to register your pets or what?
I want deposits from everyone.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So, So you liked this little zombie clothesline a little more than I did. I didn't love it. I liked the music here, though. I liked this frantic stuff of them, you know, physically moving cars and doing things and being physical. I liked the dramatic tension of the action scene. I thought it was cool.
100%. Yeah.
It was different. It was something different.
Exactly. That's what intrigues me the most about it. It's that extra layer of, we've seen them have to race against an approaching herd before. We've seen them have to even do something in an underhanded way to get away from a villain, but not in this whole... Like, I wish I had a better way to describe it, but it feels more like spy-esque even. Like, this is fucking French Resistance sabotage shit. And, like, they're having to live double lives in a way now. And that whole element of it is just so intriguing to me. I really hope they run far with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do hear Negan again in the middle of this. Turn that sleepy little burg upside down, because we know we've got a code red. They're looking for Daryl now. Clock's
we hear
racing.
Simon, I'll be there and get back by lunch. Yep. So they already know he's on his way.
Which again adds another layer to this intense drama in terms of you got to hurry the fuck up. Michonne tells Rick to smile. After it's all said and done, the explosion goes off, right?
Yep,
Simon
yep.
shows up. So we got this whole action, dramatic action piece sort of done.
And I don't know about you, but I really liked that moment from Michonne. I liked her being
she's awesome.
Fucking admit victory. Like it's a small one, but we got a victory. Like don't just sit here and sulk about, oh, we still have so much more to do. Like we fucking got one. We just got a whole bunch of tens of, you know, dozens of pounds of fucking dynamite now.
Dynamite. Yeah, I agree with you, man. I agree with you.
Yeah, I liked that. Fucking love Michonne.
If he is here, well, y'all need to see him die or something like that. So this is where our boy Simon shows up. I was concerned that this scene was going to aggravate me, but they've bless you, sir. They figured out a way to do this with, you know, a way that just makes sense. Like it's not overbearing. It's not more torture and bullshit and people getting beat up and punches. Stupid.
And also, you know, they basically turn it right into a montage. We don't have a 15-minute scene of Simon constantly walking around with Rick like, hey, yeah, your life sucks now, and I get to fucking step on your balls about it, right? Like, we don't have to see that again and again and again.
Exactly.
Like, he basically gets there, a little montage of him turning stuff upside down, then they go through the pantry. And this is, again, another scene that is rescued by this new sense of intrigue that I really like. It's not just, hey, you guys need, you know, you're out of food and you better get more because we're gonna take half. It's Rick in this moment is just now, like, I love the exchange of glances between him and Aaron, of Aaron's like I know you don't know about this. Like,
right,
we've been dealing with this all day, and Rick has to not only pretend like he doesn't, you know, that he already knew about this, but not even be upset by it in the moment that holy shit, our pan, it's not like, oh, we're down really low. No, it's been cleaned out.
Yep, like great catch by Aaron catching Rick's glance and unsure, you know, his unsure expression, and he sort of cleans it up, and exactly. It's cool. I like it.
Liked it a lot.
Simon's hilarious here. Oh, he's such a fucker.
He's fucking good. I've loved him ever since Grand Theft Auto 5.
I know. He's fucking great. So, anyway, we have a litany of other shit to attend to. So do you, I guess. And the cars roll around. That big-ass fucking pickup Simon climbs in.
Real Texas. Real got a tiger food.
Dude, I'm getting tiger food. I'm fucking getting a big-ass truck. I don't even give a fuck for my next truck. My next vehicle. I have a fucking Honda Accord, which is an awesome car. Yeah. I've had it for over 10 years. It's got 200,000 miles on it. And I'm holding the fuck out before I have to buy a car.
You're just gonna fucking straight up get a deuce and a half.
I'm getting a fucking truck because you know what? Fuck this snow bullshit. That's gonna happen in the snow.
Ooh, gotta hear me.
Nice.
Y'all gotta hear me.
Y'all gotta hear me. Put some fucking cow antlers on the front of that bitch.
Some balls hanging off the back.
No, those people should fly off the road upside down. Okay, maybe
don't worry, they do annually.
And that's harsh. I don't mean that, but the dumbest thing I've ever seen. If you have balls hanging off your truck, you're stupid. I'm sorry. I'm judging you.
Judging. Throwing shade.
It's like balls, man. It's like my car's got balls. And it's always cars with no balls, right? Fuck. If a fucking 69 Chevelle pulled up next to that thing and just fucking blow its doors off with no balls hanging from it. Anyway. So, they start to talk about what the fuck's going on in the pantry. And Rosie's like, I knew that pendejo was going to steal from us.
and that was sad because didn't they have just like a nice little touching scene in the last episode where like Gabriel's the one like giving her hope and like, we need you and everything. And then she's like, that fucking puto.
Yeah. And then, of course, Rick picks up the Bible. He's flipping through it. He doesn't read the passage because he's Rick. But then he finds the comp book, and in the back it says boat.
Love that. I totally missed that on my first go-around. It was something when I was not looking at the bar, probably ordering a beer or something.
Which is weird, because now this brings us back to an unidentified party at this point, which is the place that Rick raided, right?
Wait, was it?
Is it the boathouse?
Oh, yeah. No, that's where, yeah, it's the same place where Aaron and Rick went.
So I wonder if maybe what's his name just returning his shit? I don't know.
Maybe, holy shit, that didn't even dawn on me. Yeah, that the people who controlled that area, who left up all the signs, the no trespassing signs, yeah, they're still around. Like, yeah. Shit. Yeah.
I think it was just a solo operator. I think it was just a solo operator.
I don't know if it was.
No?
I don't know. Maybe like that was a little storehouse.
Because wasn't it something that said, if you found this, I'm dead, talking in the singular? Like, if you're this far, I've been killed, you lucky bastard. I can't remember the whole sign.
Yeah,
but that
was also the very first time we saw the boot, you know, watching them. And so it makes me think that there were still other people who at least knew about it or in that area.
Yeah, tracked them back. No big deal.
Interesting.
It's possible. And then Aaron has a little lover spat. I can't remember his boy's name.
I was trying so hard to remember. I think it's Eric. I think it's Aaron and Eric, but that sounds really dumb.
It's like, Aaron and Eric. Aaron, okay. Not Aaron.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's Aaron and Eric. I think that's okay. His name.
Well, he wants them to live, right?
Yeah.
That's his complaint.
He's like, we got to go die in another dumb Rick war again.
Right.
That's what all the Alexandrians are just like. No, well, shit. Is Rick going to kill more of us again? Are we going into the fucking meat grinder?
Right. And then we see Rick back at the old boathouse with a zombie lake. This time it's Rick, Aaron, and Michonne, and I think Rosita and Tara are all there.
I believe so. Yes.
And they're walking.
Yes, Tara is there. And because I kept thinking, I don't know about you, but when they get there and then the people start emerging around them, I was like, and they all, for most.
They're all women, by the way.
On my second viewing, I feel like I maybe spotted a guy or two. But at first I was like, they're all women. Like, this is all women. I was like, is this the Oceanside people? Like, is this, they have an outpost
closer?
That was
my immediate thought.
Yeah, I was like, did they have an outpost closer to them? Is this? And I was like, if that's the case, Tara, fucking speak up. You're the one who knows about this.
Yeah.
There's a couple
of shots of where you're looking at the frame and it is all women. Might be a couple guys in there, but I don't want to disparage those young ladies if they're actually young ladies and not men. A couple of them look like men. Oh my God, you're such a fucking shit lord. How do you know what they identify as? All because they have long hair, you think they're women?
I just see pronounced cheekbones and strong jawlines. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
I see fucking huge dicks in them pants. I'm trying to say. Anyway, but they come out of the goddamn trees like goddamn Prince of Thieves over here.
If it's not Oceanside, then this, like, you fucked with us. It's like, it's totally made out. Okay, I'm watching it right now. There's a couple dudes. See a couple guys.
Couple dudes. Couple, two, three dicks in that pack.
One or two swingers.
Yeah, two, three swinging dicks in there. And then Rick has like this goofy smile, probably because he's just drunk on the ecstasy of seeing all those firearms.
Exactly. He's been so gun deprived.
He's like, oh,
hell yeah.
I got such a boner for that goddamn M14.
And then it ends.
That's it. Hard stop.
It's a hard stop, dude.
Hard fucking stop.
That's it. It's over. Done. So we're back, bro. We are back in the saddle again with some Walking Dead, right?
There we are.
It's done. It's over. So let's queue up some listener comments. All right, Mr. Anderson, you go first.
Me up.
All you right, up.
I got Mr. Sir Craig Daly.
Sir Craig Daly. Yes. Yes. Ruffle my jacket.
Top hats and monocles all around. Yes. Well, Mr. Daly said, well, I liked it, and I am glad it is back. And credit must go to whoever came up with a new way of mass walker destruction. Father fucking G has a plan. I was a little worried that McSweaty was slipping back in, but Jekyll made sure the Hyde character got beat back down. It did feel a bit like the Magnificent Seven as they tried to round up people to fight the desperados. The fight back begins here.
Bam.
Love it, Craig.
Nice work, Yusa. Craig. Oh, my turn. Is it my turn this? I'm going to go with Natalia Addison. Natalia. She says, I loved it. It was well-paced. We actually see them plotting and planning, and my boo Darryl was hot as fuck. It's back, exclamation points. P.S. I'm not big on joining a lot of groups, but I've been listening to all your podcasts, Science Fiction Film, Westworld, and Stranger Things. Thanks for getting me through the 2 months without TWD. Aw, what a sweetie pie face she is. Thank you very much, Natalia. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.
Thanks for
that.
Joining the group.
I got another one I'm going to read. Adam Talbot, utter shit.
Yes, from that to that.
Still trying to decide what is worse, the high tension cable hijinks or Jesus' horrendous acting. Well, I'm with him on the second part for sure.
Sounds got anybody like it's else not you want to show, do? Adam.
That. Yeah, what are you going to do? You got anyone else?
I do. I got Mr. Michael Claudio.
Claudio.
Okay, so where do I begin? Rosita is in super bitch mode, but as Karen Lomas has pointed out, it is well deserved. Rosita was quick and reckless to disarm the explosives. I don't think the show has informed us that she was in the EOD in her previous life. I still hate Daryl. Sorry, not sorry. I understand King Zeke. I don't agree, but understand. Father McSweaty fucking G left the Bible open to a very specific passage that Rick just decided not to read. Nice you don't leave shit. A book open randomly on the floor unless there is something on the page. I also don't know how Father G knew about the location of the boat or that they would know to look in the back of a random book. Lastly, who the fuck was that group? I'm a comic book reader, and I have no recollection of another group that was introduced at this time. Are they going to be allies? They sure are a bunch of fucking people. Where the fuck did they come from? How hasn't anyone ran across them yet? For real. Lastly, as Brian Campbell has said, I'm glad Michonne gave Rick his balls back, / a little tickle. It is good to see him start the Ricktatorship again.
Bit of a tickle, eh? Good
bit
stuff.
Of a tickle. Bring awesome. Him back to life.
Well, thank you very much for anybody who posted on the LSG media page for this. It's facebook.com/groups/LSG on TWD. That's facebook.com/groups/LSG on TWD. If you are not a social media type, which I can't say I blame you, you can always email us after you watch the episode. Feel free to hit us at hosts@libertystreetgeek.net. That's hosts@libertystreetgeek.net. And perhaps we will get to your comment during our little segment that we do every week. So yeah, if you're not a social media type, it's okay. You can always email us at hosts@libertystreetgeek.net, and you can do that for any of our shows. Shoot us a couple of emails about your thoughts. We'd love to hear them. Right. And thank you to everyone who always comments and who always makes these group pages fun as hell. You guys kick ass.
Totally.
Matthew, I think it's time we get to our final thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, about that time.
You want me to go first or you want to go first?
You know what? You go first.
Okay, I will. All right, so The Walking Dead is back. Season 7, Episode 9, Rock in the Road. I actually liked this episode because I thought that it did a couple of things a little bit different than it normally does. I still think I'm sort of on the downswing here. I'm on the backswing of my love of The Walking Dead. It's sort of dwindled over time. I'd say over the last year, it's sort of really dwindled. And there's a lot of articles, there's a lot of shit on the internet about, is this going to save The Walking Dead? First of all, The Walking Dead is not in jeopardy. It's got a gazillion viewers. That doesn't mean that it's not above criticism, and it seems to be getting a lot of it as of late, specifically the last half of Season 6 and all of Season 7. And I don't think that that's unwarranted, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of our faithful listeners who've always loved The Walking Dead, they're kind of down on it a little bit. But it was, I think the mid-season break served this season because it needed it. I needed to walk away from it and clear my head a little and try to come back in objectively, because if you have a bad run for a few episodes or even a season, I start to realize that episodes that I might normally think are pretty good, I think aren't pretty good. And that's just because the prior four episodes have just got me down on the show overall. You know, you're in a shitty relationship. It's not going well. It hasn't been going well for months. She makes you or he makes you fucking dinner and you're like, yeah, it's too little too late, right? It's not going to save this fucking sinking ship. Yeah, the fucking green beans are terrible, right? So it's that kind of thing. So I needed to take a step. I needed a little break. We needed a break. We need to go fuck other TV shows for a while.
need to go have a tryst with Westworld and Stranger Things.
Yeah, you know, I needed to get into some ass-lapping fun with Westworld for a minute and then come back to Old Faithful. And we're going to take it slow. We're going to see how it goes. My hair isn't blown back just yet. But I'm gonna hang in there and hope for the best for this season. That's my very optimistic final thoughts for this week's episode. Matthew, how about you?
Well, I'm pretty much there with you. I think I like it a little bit more than you, and I'm less down on Walking Dead than I think a lot of people. And I do. I wanted to say pretty much exactly one thing you said there. Of I think this show has suffered from just a. I don't even know. There's probably some fucking even like scientific term for it, like a certain kind of bias that arises. But like, I think where there might have been episodes in like season 6 and 7 where had they occurred in season 2, people would have been like, oh, what a great episode. But since they happened where they did, people were like, well, this happened and this happened, and they've been set on a biased path to want to nitpick it. And
I think
pick
so.
The shit. And I think the show has. Suffered from that curse, or even when they put out.
I will admit, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I will admit that I 100% have done that. Full admission. Like I know that I'm suffering from that a little bit, which is why I think that there's got to be other people doing the same thing, right? I'm not so unique that I'm the only one doing that.
Yeah, where it's like, am I being hard on this because it's bad, or am I just more eager to be hard on it because it's annoyed me or in the past, you know,
right?
That whole kind of thing.
But it that doesn't mean it's not above it. I mean,
totally
it's,
not.
It's
yeah.
been struggling a little bit, but maybe you could back up a little bit. Sorry, I interrupted your final thoughts like a douchebag.
No. I mean, that's basically all I was gonna say about that. I mean, it's just I'm much like I've said, like Karen Lomas. I'm a fucking loyalist. I'm here. I'm here to the end, and I still have my moments of. That was kind of dumb, or like that was kind of weak, but on the whole, I still it's my care for these characters that brings me through. And now my biggest thing of interest for this latter half of the season is the whole double spy plot kind of intrigue going on. I really really like that. I think it's even an interesting little place that Rick left Daryl of being like, all right, you're kind of an emissary for us here now. It's, you know, Morgan's here. You're here. It's kind of on you guys to maybe help win him over. And I like the idea of Daryl's in this new extra hardened place again from having to have escaped this awful situation. He's lost friends. He kind of feels like it's his fault. He's pretty violent and angry and, you know, not ready to be, I don't know, a deal maker. But now he's kind of in the position of you're the ambassador for Alexandria here now. You're going to have to kind of come around a little bit and help sway in a more articulate way. So that could be interesting. I hope they do something with that with Daryl, because I'll admit, that's one thing the show has done a poor job with recently. It's not giving Daryl enough to do. Like, there needs to be some episodes with him. I would love to see a Daryl/Ezekiel-centric episode of them in the kingdom. Like, that sounds fucking good.
Sure.
But yeah, the thing that I'm the most excited about going forward is them going on missions like this, these kinds of recon missions, or meeting up with having a rendezvous with another contact from a different camp, but they got to make sure they're not seen by any of the saviors, that it's not reported back, and they're doing this kind of dueling timelines, trying to outwit each other and make sure they're staying covert. That sounds so good, and they still have zombies they could bump into. Like just thinking about that has me excited about this, the second half of the season. So I am still in a very positive place. I'm looking forward to it. I still have plenty of fucking fun with this show. So
we definitely have fun podcasting about it, don't we?
Oh, hell yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
I don't know how we even got there, but we talked about Gran Torino for like 6 minutes this time around.
We talked about dicks and Gran Torino, and I don't even know what. But I think we're going to call it a night, and we will see you guys next week. Have a good one. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out LibertyStreetGeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.